This is the one-stop FPL podcast. Hello and welcome back to another episode of One Stop FPL with me, your host, Andy Johnson. On today's episode, we're looking at Game Week 10, and the deadline is fast approaching on Saturday the 2nd of November at 11 a.m. UK time. And I'm recording this late on Friday night, so we're just going to briefly run through the fixtures, any key players to look out for to attack Game Week 10. We'll also be discussing injury news, and there's plenty of it this week. And we'll also be discussing whether or not to sell Erling Haaland. But with only a few hours left until the deadline, let's get into it. Right then, Game Week 10 is upon us. We are almost 25% of the way through the season, and it's proving a pretty challenging one for us FPL managers. Lots of frustrating turns of events after seeing double Arsenal defence fail to keep clean sheets, double Tottenham attack fail to get the returns with a good run of fixtures, and all the rest in between. But we keep marching forwards with Game Week 10. The deadline is Saturday the 2nd of November at 11 a.m. UK time. That is 90 minutes before the first ball is kicked of the game week as always. And the early kickoff for Game Week 10 is Newcastle versus Arsenal. So Newcastle at home, where they tend to do slightly better, but that double Arsenal defence hopefully will finally hold out. Saliba is back, so that's good news for Arsenal. There are question marks over Gabriel's fitness, though, so we'll come on to that a little bit later. Then we've got the 3 o'clock fixtures, Bournemouth versus Manchester City, a City side that are seriously depleted, impacted heavily by injuries. Ipswich are at home to Leicester in what will surely be a huge six-pointer in the relegation battle. Liverpool host Brighton, Nottingham Forest are at home to West Ham, and Southampton are against Everton, perhaps another relegation six-pointer. We've also got Wolves versus Crystal Palace, which is the later kickoff on that Saturday. And then on the Sunday, two games for us. We've got Spurs at home to Aston Villa in a battle of the high lines before Manchester United host Chelsea. A huge game for both of those after Manchester United announced their new manager. The first Premier League fixture without Erik ten Hag. Ruud van Nistelrooy will be in charge for that one ahead of the arrival of Ruben Amorim. And finally, on Monday night, we have Fulham hosting Brentford. So those are the fixtures for Game Week 10, but what about the injury news? Because it's been quite an eventful week with the midweek League Cup action proving costly again for many teams when it comes to injuries. So I think the best way to do this is to just run through the teams in alphabetical order, and we'll just give you the brief headlines for significant FPL assets. So we'll start with Arsenal, and the key injury doubt here is Gabriel. Now, obviously, Saliba will be back from his one-game suspension after picking up a red card, and that will obviously help the Arsenal defence for this tricky fixture away at Newcastle. But Gabriel is a doubt. Now, obviously, Mikel Arteta has proved wholly unreliable when it comes to updates on injuries in press conferences. That being said, we'll still just run through what he has said about Gabriel. He was asked whether or not there was any good news on Gabriel, and he said yes. We have a training session today, and if he completes that, he will be available. Now, the good news for this Arsenal fixture is that it is the early kickoff on the Saturday. So we do have a slight chance of getting some late news and team leaks potentially to find out whether or not Gabriel will be included in the matchday squad and even if he'll be starting. If he is and you own him, then obviously you keep hold. Obviously, it's a tricky game away at Newcastle, a Newcastle side that can score goals, especially at home. That being said, this Arsenal defence is very, very resilient when it's at full strength. And I do think that the leaks at the back in recent weeks have definitely been more of an anomaly rather than a trend that will continue. So I would be holding on to Gabrielle as an owner myself. And obviously, if I get any news to the contrary that he isn't fit and available, then I could potentially make a switch close to the deadline tomorrow morning. But for now, Gabrielle stays in my side. Next significant piece of injury news to discuss is at Brighton, where João Pedro is back in training. So we'll have to see how João Pedro does in training. He's obviously been out for a long time, so I'm not too sure if he'll be available to start at the weekend. We didn't get any more clarity beyond that from Fabian Hürzeler. The likelihood is, given Welbeck's current form and the fact that he was back after a doubt, picking up a knock in 8, and he did play in game week 9, then I would expect Welbeck to get the nod. João Pedro, though, could potentially be back on the bench this weekend, so we'll have to keep an eye out for that one. Elsewhere, Lewis Dunk is ruled out with an injury to his calf, and Minté is still a doubt. No confirmation as to whether or not he is back from his groin issue. There's no significant news in terms of injuries at Chelsea, although it is just worth noting from the press conference that obviously Cole Palmer has been confirmed by Maresca. He will be playing almost guaranteed every single week this season. He also spoke very highly of Malo Gusto, who he thinks can step up from defence into that midfield area and cause a lot of problems for oppositions. And with Reece James playing at left back in game week 9, it would seem that Mark Cucurella has lost his first choice status at Chelsea. So we could see maybe Malo Gusto playing on the left and Reece James back on the right, or the other way around. But it does look quite likely that Gusto will get the nod ahead of Mark Cucurella. Moving on from Chelsea, the big news at Crystal Palace is that Eberechi Eze is ruled out until after the international break. And that is the absolute minimum number of game weeks he'll be out for, 10 and 11. That was confirmed by Oliver Glasner. So that's a significant blow to Crystal Palace. Another blow to them is that Adam Wharton is out for the next 4 weeks at least. Moving on to Everton, and there is a huge injury doubt over Dwight McNeil. So he actually suffered a knock to the knee in game week 9. So he hasn't been completely ruled out. And Sean Dyche said that Dwight has got a chance and that they're hopeful. So he's done a bit of work with the physio team. That was on Thursday. They're hopeful for him. So we've got our fingers crossed that Dwight McNeil can play, because that is a fantastic fixture for Everton. Away at Southampton, a Southampton side at home who will inevitably continue to play the football they play. Incredibly positive, expansive, but also hugely high risk. And it has been to their detriment when it comes to leaking goals at the back. And that Everton side surely can capitalise on that, especially if they've got their chief creator in Dwight McNeil starting for them. Next significant piece of injury news is actually at Leicester, where there was an emerging attacking talent who was starting to catch the eye as a nice appealing differential, and that was Fatawu. Unfortunately, though, he has picked up an injury, which would have been a shame for a few FPL managers who might have been eyeing up a nice differential with that fixture against Ipswich in game week 10. However, Fatawu has been ruled out with a groin injury. That's been confirmed by Steve Cooper. But it's not looking good for Fatawu as well. Could be potentially a long-term injury there. Moving on to Liverpool, and the key piece of information here is that with Diogo Jota out, there is an increased appeal to bring in Darwin Nunez. And I say that with a chuckle, because Darwin Nunez is someone who over the last year or two has lured in many an FPL manager. Bit of a troll sometimes when it comes to great fixtures, great underlying data, but just can't seem to put the ball in the back of the net. However, those days may be behind him under new management. But also, there's absolutely no guarantee that he does get the start up front. Of course, with Luis Diaz and Gakpo and Darwin all competing for those two other places alongside Mo Salah in that front three. I would say that Luis Diaz and Gakpo are both better playing off the left. So Darwin is more likely to be selected to play in that number nine role with less competition for that position. So Darwin Nunez is a particularly appealing option, I think, this week and particularly short term for Liverpool. Moving on, Manchester City injury news, and where do we start? Pep Guardiola didn't know where to start when he was asked, and of course he's not the most reliable when it comes to this information in press conferences, but he really didn't want to give much away. He said, tomorrow you'll know, you'll see the squad list. He said he has many doubts, most of them half-half, so tomorrow you'll know. We're going to play with 11 players tomorrow. Now, he has said after the League Cup exit at the hands of Spurs that he has just 13 fit senior players, and that is a big issue for Manchester City. It is worth mentioning, though, that playing a significantly understrength side in that League Cup game against Tottenham, a Tottenham side that made a couple of changes, I think five changes in total, but still put out a very much a strong 11 that would easily be competitive in the Premier League. Manchester City dominated the vast majority of that game and they still looked absolutely fantastic. They had a couple of kids in the team and it just goes to show that City are probably the least likely team to be affected by an injury crisis because the quality runs just so deep through that squad and they don't really change the style of play. Ultimately, the most concerning loss is the one they had a few weeks ago, and that was Rodri. Statistically, he's the player that they will miss the most. Beyond that, they still play really good football, really good possession football, and really good attacking football, almost whoever they field. So, that being said, the players missing, confirmed ruled out at the moment, Oscar Bob, Rodri, Kevin De Bruyne, Jeremy Doku, Jack Grealish and Kyle Walker. And there are significant injury doubts over Savinho, Akanji and Vardiol. So, if you're an owner of Rico Lewis and you've been worried about potential rotation, at the moment it looks really promising. He did actually say, Guardiola, that he would like to rest Rico Lewis, but at the moment he just can't. So that does sound really promising for Lewis owners. Haaland obviously will play. Foden will almost certainly play. So if you did move early for Foden and you've been frustrated by the lack of returns and the lack of starts in the first part of the season, fear not, he is almost guaranteed to start. And you know what? There is one other player who has started to catch the eye, and that is Mateus Nunes. Now, he hasn't been attracting much attention, and that's because he hasn't been getting any minutes. He's been coming off the bench every now and again in the first few weeks and getting the odd minute here or there. One 18-minute appearance early on in the season, picked up an assist for Nunes. And in the last game, Pep was forced to start him through the lack of options elsewhere. And he picked up another assist. And he does have two goals as well in the League Cup. So Nunes does look like a really promising player, almost guaranteed minutes at the moment for City. How long that lasts for, we don't know. But at 4.9, and with Manchester City facing Bournemouth this week, obviously not a tricky fixture, going down to the South Coast as well, away from home, not easy. But the likelihood is that City is still going to have a front four of Haaland, Phil Foden, Bernardo Silva and Mateus Nunes. And a midfield two that will sit behind probably of Kovacic and Gundogan. So it's not exactly like they're short of attacking talent. Still plenty of goals in that front line. And I quite like Mateus Nunes as a nice differential at 4.9. Obviously, as soon as the options in midfield and attack come back with the likes of Doku, Grealish, Savinho, those minutes for Nunes will significantly decrease. There's no doubt about that. But he has looked really good. And if he takes his opportunity, which he clearly has at the moment, if he continues to put up really good numbers and he keeps on getting assists and goals, it's going to be very difficult for Pep to drop him. Moving on to Manchester United, and the big news really is that Erik ten Hag is out the door. Ruud van Nistelrooy comes in and they finally start scoring goals. 5-2 victory over Leicester in the League Cup. And the injury news from that one is just simply that Christian Eriksen missed out through an injury. We don't have any information on that at the moment. Unsurprisingly, the press conference featured absolutely nothing injury-wise. It was all to do with the new manager, Ruben Amorim, coming in with Ruud van Nistelrooy taking charge in the interim. So no real information beyond that, but Christian Eriksen, a doubt after missing out through injury midweek. Next up, we've got Newcastle, and Eddie Howe did say that both Anthony Gordon and Alexander Isak had niggling injuries. He also said that they now both feel okay and that they're going to assess how they feel 48 hours after that cup game. So it's interesting just to see that that's been raised. Now, Eddie Howe, another unreliable press conferencer when it comes to injury information. So just one to keep an eye on. I would imagine that both will be okay, but there are doubts over Gordon and Isak. So just worth keeping an eye and finding out if there is any early information, as they are in the early kickoff against Arsenal as well. Moving on to Nottingham Forest and the most informed striker in the Premier League, Chris Wood. Nuno Espirito Santo has confirmed that he has a slight knock from the last game. So he, along with Morgan Gibbs-White, who missed out in game week 9, will be assessed close to that fixture. So slight doubts over Chris Wood. So owners of him, just keep an eye out to find out if there's any late information just ahead of the deadline tomorrow morning. But there is a slight doubt over Chris Wood. Moving on now to Tottenham. And thankfully, we do have Ange Postecoglou to give us reliable information in press conferences. He's always pretty forthcoming. And he has confirmed that Son Heung-min has trained today on Friday. So if he trains tomorrow on Saturday, then he should be okay for the weekend. That's fantastic news to hear for Tottenham. Mickey van der Ven went off early in that League Cup game against Manchester City, having pulled a hamstring. He was actually in tears as he went down the tunnel. Yves Bissouma ran after him as well to sort of comfort and console him. So that did not look good at all for Mickey van der Ven. However, Postecoglou did say in the press conference, it's nothing too serious. He sort of strained a hamstring, but we are looking at after the November international break. So next couple of game weeks, no Mickey van der Ven. Christian Romero and Timo Werner are both yellow flagged. They went off early with slight injury concerns, but Postecoglou has said that both have a chance still for this weekend. So fingers crossed those two are both available as well. But the headline news at Tottenham is that Son Heung-min looks pretty likely to play against Aston Villa. And that just about wraps up the injury updates for this week. I did say there were a lot of them. Right then, the big question that everyone seems to be asking at the moment is, is it worth considering selling Erling Haaland? Now, 15.4 million is the current price tag. Incredibly expensive asset. And with just one goal in his last four, is he worth it? Now, the problem we've got is that normally we'd say yes, and it's worth sticking with him because he does have that explosive point scoring capability. And we just know that all it takes is one game for him to bang in a hat trick. And all of a sudden, the question marks are all evaporated into thin air. And Haaland is once again an absolute essential. However, given the current circumstances at Manchester City, with the number of injuries they've got, There is a question mark over how great the service is going to be to Haaland. We already know that when he plays, for example, with Kevin De Bruyne, the data underlying it all looks so much better. And ultimately, the points come as well. The goals flow better. There's a great link-up and understanding between Haaland and De Bruyne. And since he's been out, Haaland hasn't been quite as metronomic in his goal scoring. As I say, one goal in the last four is not great. And he is now relying on an ever-changing team behind him to provide a little bit of consistency and great goal scoring chances for him. If there's a team out there that are capable of doing it, it is Manchester City. As I said earlier, when they played Spurs in midweek with a much changed side, they created lots of good chances. Chances that if Haaland was playing up front instead of Phil Foden, I would expect Haaland to put away a couple of them and probably win the game. So I still see Haaland as a player who will get chances and will score goals. Obviously, the form at the moment is a little patchy, and that is way below par for a 15.4 million striker. But that being said, it was only last week that he got his goal against Southampton, but his XG was something like 2.3, 2.4, really, really high. On another day, he would have easily got a hat-trick. Very frustrating for the few out there that decided to triple captain him. Because the data suggests it was a great decision, but the points return suggests that they were unlucky in the end. So on the whole, I would say Haaland is not a sell, but I can see the appeal given the number of high-performing premium midfield options that you can get into your side if you don't have Haaland. Obviously, Salah is very, very expensive. And if you've gone Haaland and Salah, you're not really able to afford too many other premiums. Probably the best you're going to get is a Trent in defence. But it's very difficult to get a Saka or a Palmer in when you've got almost 30 million invested in Salah and Haaland. If you do want to go down the route of selling Erling Haaland because you like the idea of loading up on those premium midfield assets, then there are plenty of budget strikers to choose from, and many are doing really, really well at the moment. There's a lot of value out there. So if we start, obviously, with the most in-form striker in the Premier League at the moment, and that, of course, is Chris Wood at Nottingham Forest. He's 6.4 million. And he's already got 7 goals in the first 9 game weeks. That is way above his XG so far this season. So he is outperforming the data. And the fixtures aren't too bad in the short term either. West Ham this week, Newcastle next, and both of those are at home. Then they've got a couple of tricky ones with Arsenal away and Manchester City away, but they do have Ipswich in between them. So out of the next 5, West Ham, Newcastle at home and Ipswich at home, they look really promising. Arsenal and City away could be weeks where you bench Chris Wood, depending on what midfielders you have in your squad. Next up to consider is Johan Wissa at Brentford, who is doing really, really well. Now, obviously, many have Brian and Bumo. I think might just be the 4th or 3rd most popular player in people's FPL team. Certainly in terms of midfielders, I think if you exclude Haaland, I think only Cole Palmer and Salah are more popular than Brian and Bumo. But Wissa is a nice way to get a differential by doubling up on that Brentford attack. At just 6 million, he is a nice cheap option. Now, he's only appeared 6 times because he did obviously pick up an injury in the first 9 weeks. But from those 6 appearances, he's got 5 goals and 2 assists. He's getting 7 big chances already this season. And the fixtures look promising. Over the next 5, Wissa has Fulham away, Bournemouth at home, Everton away, Leicester at home and Villa away. So definitely an opportunity for goals in those fixtures for Brentford. And Wissa is a really appealing option as well. Now, there are a couple of Wolves strikers who are worth contemplating. You've got Cunha, obviously, who's the slightly more expensive option at 6.5 million, but you've also got Strand Larsen at 5.5. So if you want to go for the slightly more budget option, then Strand Larsen is an appealing option. But Mateus Cunha is the one that has the more appealing data. He's got 4 goals to his name already this season. And the next few fixtures do look really good for Wolves. They've got 2 home games in a row with Palace and Southampton, which is extremely appealing. They've got Fulham after that as well. So good fixtures for Wolves. So I do like both Cunha and Strand Larsen. Out of the two, I think ultimately Cunha is the slightly better pick. In terms of the data, what we'll say is that he's a million more than Strand Larsen, and Cunha is playing out on the left at the moment, Strand Larsen playing through the middle. So there is definitely a lot going for Strand Larsen as well. And finally, in terms of an option to consider up front, in the budget category, we've got Raul Jimenez at Fulham, who's had a really good start to the season. He wasn't actually in the starting lineup at the beginning, but Muniz underperforming, got dropped, and Raul Jimenez earned his place back in the starting 11. And he's done well. He's repaid the faith that Marco Silva has shown in him. 4 goals and an assist to his name already. But that could all change, because all it takes clearly for Marco Silva to see is a drop off in form, and he could find himself back on the bench. But for now, he is clearly the first choice centre forward, and he's in pretty decent form. The fixtures aren't too bad as well for Fulham. Brentford at home this week, and after that they've got Palace and Wolves. So nice set of fixtures for Fulham in the short term. Could be worth a punt there. Now, obviously, I've listed all of these as potential budget replacements for Erling Haaland. And the reason why I've listed the budget options is because I think that if you're selling Haaland, it's because you want to fund the more premium assets in midfield, and you're going to need significant funds to be able to do that. And ultimately, you're not going to be able to get enough money by selling Haaland and only bringing in, say, a Havertz or an Isak or a Watkins. So I do see these options that I've listed out here as decent replacements who are reliable, scoring at the moment in good form. And I do think that there could be a net increase in your points return if you bring in someone like that and a premium midfielder to go alongside a Saka or a Palmer, like a Salah, rather than just keeping Haaland. So I can see the benefit in doing that. A lot of managers who have got Haaland at the moment don't have Salah and they want him. And they might already have a Saka or a Palmer, and their only way of funding the move to get to Salah is to sell the more expensive of those premium assets, and that would be Haaland. And of course, Saka and Palmer are really high performing assets at the moment and don't quite take up the same funds that Haaland does. So that's the main reason why I've suggested these slightly more budget options. Of course, if you want to keep Haaland, then all of these budget forwards are a fantastic replacement as well for Dominic Solanke, who is currently the serial underperformer in a Spurs side that, apart from game week 9, where they massively underperformed against Crystal Palace, this is a Spurs side that create loads of chances and score plenty of goals. And somehow Solanke is just dodging all of the points. It is quite bizarre because he's passing the eye test. He's playing incredibly well. But the issue is he's playing really well a little bit too deep, and he's not actually getting himself into goal scoring opportunities. So what's quite often happening is he's dropping deep, being involved in the build-up play and doing an incredibly effective job. He's also making all the runs and occupying the centre-backs, which is creating opportunities in the channels and in the wide areas for the likes of Werner, Brennan Johnson, Kulusevski. So it's quite interesting to see that whilst he's actually playing really well and is incredibly effective, and he's certainly not at risk of losing his place because he's so important to what Spurs do, he's not actually looking likely to return goals at the moment. It seems a little bit reminiscent of that Firmino role when Mane and Salah were getting all of the goals and all of the returns. But Firmino was just so integral and so pivotal in that sort of false nine role. I mean, if we look at Solanke's XG in the last three fixtures, it's really concerning. 3-2 victory over Brighton in game week 7. He played 90 minutes, but he registered 0 XG, which is really, really worrying. And then since then, in game week 8, a 4-1 victory over West Ham. Played 80 minutes, but his XG, 0.08. And it was 0.02 in the 1-0 defeat to Crystal Palace. So not looking great. Before then, the XG was much better. 1.3 against Manchester United and got his goal. 1.6 against Brentford, where he got his goal. So it can be good and he can get returns. There's no doubt about that. He got 19 goals for Bournemouth last season. And he's going to get more chances in this Spurs side. I've got no doubts about that. At the moment, it just feels like the form might be a little patchy. And when the form goes a little bit, then you tend to start wanting to drop deeper and get more involved in build-up play. If he can stay patient in these next two home games against Villa and Ipswich, he should get plenty of chances. So fingers crossed he gets returns before the international break. I think many FPL managers, myself included, who own him are starting to get a little bit impatient and will probably be moving off him after then anyway, because the fixtures do get a little trickier for Spurs after that international break. So plenty of budget replacement options that I've just listed to consider for him. If you do want to keep Haaland in your side. Right then, just time for me to run through my likely team ahead of game week 10. I am starting the double Arsenal defence once again. David Raya in goal and Gabriel at the back, both away at Newcastle. A Newcastle side that may or may not be with Anthony Gordon or Alexander Isak. Fingers crossed that happens, because that will drastically improve my chances of an Arsenal clean sheet. Now, I could, of course, play Henderson, who is away at Wolves, but I just can't bring myself to bench the Arsenal defence. I know the fixture is tricky away at Newcastle, but this Arsenal side have the capability of keeping clean sheets better than most in the Premier League. Certainly better than the Crystal Palace side, who albeit did well against that Tottenham team, but it was a Tottenham team that were way below par. And Wolves have been scoring a lot of goals lately. They may not have been getting the results, but they have been scoring freely. And with the fixture swing for Wolves, there are a lot of managers that are bringing in attacking assets at Wolves. Strand Larsen, Cunha, Ryan Aitnori, all potential points returners for owners there. So I don't really feel particularly compelled to go with Henderson. So David Raya helps me double up that Arsenal defence for perhaps another painful couple of points. Joining them at the back, I've got Trent Alexander-Arnold at home to Brighton and Anthony Robinson at home to Brentford. So fingers crossed for some Liverpool and Fulham clean sheets there. That means I'm opting to keep Konsa on the bench, and that is because Villa are away at Tottenham, a Tottenham side that have been scoring goals, maybe not in game week 9 against Palace, but they certainly were back to goal scoring ways in midweek against Manchester City, and I expect that to continue at the weekend. So on the bench, I've got Greaves, who's been injured for a couple of weeks now and will be for the foreseeable. At some point, I will obviously look to replace him. But at just 4 million, I'm quite happy to just stick him as my third choice bench option. So no issues there. In midfield, I am starting Mo Salah at home to Brighton. Brennan Johnson at home to Aston Villa. Fingers crossed he can get back to goal scoring ways. Dwight McNeil away at Southampton. I know he's a slight injury doubt, a yellow flag on him at the moment, but I will be starting him in the hope that he does make the starting 11 this weekend, because that fixture against Southampton looks ripe for the picking. And at the moment, it's Morgan Rodgers in midfield alongside them with Minté on the bench. An injured Minté for the last couple of weeks. Slight doubts as to whether or not he'll be back available this week, but with Minté away at Liverpool anyway, the fixtures don't look too great for the next couple of weeks for Brighton. I'm very tempted to sell Minté this week for Mateus Nunes at Manchester City. If that were to be the case, I'm almost certain to bring him straight into that starting lineup at the expense of Morgan Rodgers, who definitely has the toughest of fixtures across my midfielders away at Spurs. So Rodgers would probably go to first choice bench option, and the midfield four would be Salah, Johnson, McNeil and Nunes. Then up front, I would keep the same three from last week. That's Haaland away at Bournemouth, Solanke at home to Aston Villa and Strand Larsen at home to Crystal Palace. So that's my likely team ahead of game week 10. A reminder once again that the deadline is Saturday, the 2nd of November at 11 a.m. UK time. Best of luck to all of you chasing a green arrow out there. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. As always, if you can rate or review your podcast on your chosen player or app, it's greatly appreciated. It helps other people find the podcast, which is fantastic. My name is Andy Johnson. You can find me on X at OneStopFPL. Best of luck to everyone. Thank you very much for listening, and I'll talk to you again soon.